Why don't we begin today's meditation? So the program for today is similar to the ones from the other days. I'm going to start with 15 minutes of meditation, and then I'm going to do a 30 to 40 minute lecture and demonstration for you, and then I will take questions. So if you have specific issues that you're dealing with, please let me know. You can do so anonymously via the chat. You can change your name and make yourself anonymous and then put it in the chat, or you can just share it with everybody. And keep in mind that whatever issues you are encountering, it's very likely that others are too. So please don't be shy. We're all going through a lot right now. So would love if you would share what's going on with you. And if there's something that I can potentially deal with and help you overcome and kind of reprocess for you, then we'll do that. And let's begin today's meditation. So this is going to be the Hum Sa meditation. The three points of focus meditation. So let me set a timer here for 15 minutes. 15 minutes. All right, take a deep breath and close your eyes. And as you close your eyes, allow your attention to focus upon the sensation of air coming through your nose. Just feel the air coming through your nostrils. In and out. Easy inhales. Easy exhales. And as you do that with each inhalation, silently say on the inside, hum. And with each gentle, natural exhalation, silently say, sa. As you do that with your eyes closed, you may wonder, hey, what should I do with my eyes? And just look up with them. Let your eyes focus on the space in between your eyebrows. Some traditions call that the third eye center. So now you're doing three things. You're breathing in and paying attention to that breath. Noticing the sensation of air coming through your nostrils. While saying hum as you inhale, silently say saw as you exhale. And all the while, your eyes are focused upwards on the space in between your eyebrows. You're basically looking at the back of your forehead. A very gentle kind of focus, nothing too intense. And when you do all these three things, you will very successfully be rid of all thoughts. Your mind will become this very calm, silent, spacious area. And you will still continue to have thoughts, and that just means that you have ceased to do one of the three things. Just come back to center and do the three points of focus. Breath, Hum Sa mantra, and eyes up, looking at the space between your eyebrows. And continue to do so for the next 12 minutes or so. Ideally, you want to keep your back straight, shoulders relaxed. Take nice, deep, relaxing breaths as you pay attention to the sensation of air moving through your nostrils, up your nose, while you silently say hum as you inhale, sa as you exhale. And flip your eyes up. So you're looking up at your forehead. And if at any moment you have a thought come through, just recognize the thought, thank it, and let it go. And return to center with the three practices. Pay attention to the breath, sensation of air moving through your nostrils. Hum on the inhale, silently. Saw on the exhale, silently. And your eyes looking up at the back of your forehead, the space between your eyebrows. Continue to take nice, deep, comfortable breaths as you pay attention to the sensation of air moving past your nostrils into your lungs. As you silently say hum on each in-breath, and silently say saw on each out breath. With your eyes
focused at the space in between your eyebrows. And as a thought comes in, acknowledge it and let it go by returning to center. 3 points of focus. As soon as you return to the 3 points of focus, the thought will depart of its own accord. Continue breathing deeply and comfortably. Maintain your awareness of the sensation of air coming through your nose. Every inhale, silently say hum. Each exhale, silently say song. Maintain a straight back if you can, it's comfortable. shoulders relaxed. And keep your eyes up. Look at the back of your forehead, at the space in between your eyebrows. And that's 15 minutes. A nice deep breath. A gesture of gratitude for having the time, the space, and the ability to do this meditation. All right. Well, welcome back. How y'all feeling? So the usual procedure is to ask you how you're doing before we start. So there's the before rating of happiness and misery, and then there's the after rating of happiness and misery. So on a scale of 1 to 10, why don't you jot down somewhere or keep in your mind what your happiness rating was before we started the meditation today. So a 10 would be like, woohoo, ecstatic, life is amazing, which it is. And one would be, I'm not feeling so good. Cat died, boss fired me, or worse. And there's also a misery rating. And it's possible to have a high misery rating and a high happiness rating. These are two separate mental pathways. So put down both of those ratings, and then we will progress through the various exercises of the day and see how that does. And if you have not muted yourself, please do. I'm looking here, everybody's pretty much muted, but I'm hearing some keyboard sounds there. So if you could do that, that'll be fantastic. So I was thinking about a story from way back when about triathletes. So the guys who started the whole notion of the triathlete were a crazy, crazy bunch. And as you may guess, they were supremely fit individuals. And they all, for some reason, were named Scott. So Scott, this guy, he basically could run forever, right? And he remembers that one time his car ran out of gas and the nearest gas station was 10 miles away. And he's like, no problem. He just grabbed the gas cans and he ran 10 miles there, 10 miles back, boom, gassed up his car and there he went. And I couldn't help but think that, wow, that must be so incredibly liberating. To know that even if your car breaks down, you can get wherever you want to because you're that fit. You can just hoof it and go. This guy could run. Most of us can probably walk pretty long, but the whole notion of being so fit that you can actually run to whatever destination you want to, given enough time, that's pretty powerful and pretty liberating. So I mentioned the story of Scott the triathlete because what we're doing here is also about fitness. Except that what we're working on is mental fitness, not physical fitness. So the notion is that in order to become physically fit, you exercise. And in order to become mentally fit, you meditate. So what we did today was kind of a personal training session. What you're doing is you're telling your brain to do a very specific thing. In this case, it's to focus and to dismiss thoughts. And the more you do that, the better you are going to get at it. And the analog for that kind of physical fitness in the domain of mental fitness is that now whatever weird thing the world throws at you, whatever difficulty, whatever fluctuation, whatever vicissitudes come your way, you know that you can handle it. It's just like being that incredibly fit triathlete. You're like, marathon, no problem. We got that down. We got that covered. So
These are some of the long-term benefits of meditating on a regular basis. You just become that much less worried about things that could potentially worry you. So it's like this meta position to the things that could potentially bother you. So that's one of the big things I've gotten out of meditation. I started probably around 2004 or so, my regular meditation practice, and it took me a while to actually really get that regularity in. I started with 20 minutes and now I do 30 minutes. So I totally hear you if this is not fully integrated into your life yet. And at the same time, right now is an extraordinary opportunity to make that time and make this a regular practice. If one of the results of this whole pandemic crisis is that you now have a regular meditation practice for the rest of your life, that's a huge win. So I encourage you to do this on a regular basis, even when I'm not the one guiding you. And a lot of you who are here, you already do that, I'm sure. And it's probably just an additional bit of a practice for you. So if you have questions, please feel free to put them in the chat window there, and I will attend to them as I get there, or raise your hand. I think there's a little hand-raising function as well. So chat right there. Okay. Let's do this. Okay, good. So, and meditation just brings you superpowers. Another interesting thing that's happened over the past few years that I've been meditating regularly is I've become super sensitive to my own thoughts and feelings. Because what you're doing when you're doing a meditation like the Hum Sa meditation is that you're becoming very attentive to the passage of thoughts through your mind. And Cheryl Salzberg, one of the great meditation teachers of our time, she gave a talk in Santa Monica some time ago, and it was like this total aha moment for me. She said, meditation isn't the practice of obliterating thoughts or eliminating thoughts. It's the practice of learning how to dismiss them. Because your mind's job is to create thoughts. So if you stop having thoughts, that means you're probably brain dead. That is end of party. That is not the goal of this exercise. The point is to be free to meditate to the point that you can recognize the thought coming in and know that it's not you. It's just the thought. The thought came in and that's totally cool. And you can just let it go. And if you do that a couple of hundred times a session, which is probably how many thoughts I have each session, then you get really good at it. So when you're driving down the street and maybe somebody cuts you off or you see somebody who looks like your ex, you're like, you have this weird thought, right? And you're like, oh, it's just a thought. And you become very good at just letting that go. And you become super vigilant about your own thoughts. So noticing what they are, where they came from. It's like, oh, wow, I'm feeling this now because I had that thought 5 seconds ago. Isn't that interesting? As opposed to being caught in that emotion, as opposed to being dragged along by that emotion. So a big part of this meditation practice and the whole point of it is that whereas before you had a thought and you kind of followed it and you followed it more and you went down this weird rabbit hole and you don't even know where you ended up, now you can just look at the thought and boop, snip, be done with it, and keep moving. So I'd like to share with you a story which I first heard from actually my favorite translation of the Tao Te Ching by Stephen Mitchell. So the appendix of the book is very rich. He's got a bunch of cool stuff like this. So the story is about Lady Sono, and she was a Buddhist, and in the community she was known to be incredibly devout and pure and kind and wise, and her purity of heart was respected all through the land. So one day a fellow Buddhist comes along and makes a long trip and says, "Dearest Sono, you know, I'm experiencing so much pain. What can I do to put my heart at rest?" And Lady Sono says, "Well, every morning and every evening, and whenever anything happens to you, say, thanks for everything. I have no complaints whatsoever." Guy's like, "Hey, I can do that." So he takes off, and a year passes. A year later, he comes by, and he looks just crestfallen. He's still not happy. He's like, Lady Sono, I've said your prayer over and over and over, and yet nothing in my life has changed. I am still the same selfish, suffering person I was before. What should I do now?" And Sono says to him immediately, "Thanks for everything. I have no complaints whatsoever." And then suddenly, in that moment of enlightenment, Satori, they call it in Zen Buddhism, the guy got it. And he's like, "Oh, thanks for everything. I have no complaints whatsoever. So I share with you this story because it's very applicable to the times that we're in right now. And the idea is that being happy isn't about getting rid of everything that could potentially bother you. It's about noticing that this moment right now is the thing you want to be okay about. This is the moment that you want to say, thanks for everything. I have no complaints whatsoever. So it's kind of this meta okay state. You're okay about the thing that's happening, whatever it is. I think you've seen the bumper sticker or the refrigerator magnet that says, bless this mess. There's never going to be a time in your life when life is not a mess. There's never going to be a time when everything is completely lined up. You're like, yes, and that's actually going to be pretty boring anyway. So why would you want that? So it's always going to be a mess. So just learn to bless this mess and be meta okay with it, okay? And when you do that, things become a hell of a lot easier to deal with, because a lot of the pain that we inflict upon ourselves, well, actually the suffering, pain is not optional. Pain happens, but suffering is optional. A lot of the suffering that we inflict upon ourselves comes from this notion of expectation. You want it to be different. You want things to be just the way you want them to be. You want to be able to go to the restaurant. You want to be able to hang out with your buddies and maybe, I don't know, go play volleyball on the beach, go out on a few dates. Who knows? You want certain things from the world. You expect the world to conform to your desires. And the world sometimes has other ideas, right? So what you want to do is you want to notice what is happening right now and then think, thanks for everything. I have no complaints whatsoever. And when you do that, you become supremely empowered, because then nothing can really bother you so much, okay? Good. So any questions for now? Questions? Okay. Let's keep on moving then. Now, another story I want to tell you is about the very first lesson that they gave us in medical school. So this is actually pretty common. But the first thing they teach you in medical school is about inflammation. So what is inflammation? They give us these four Latin words. Inflammation is rubor, tumor, calor, and dolor. So the thing is inflamed, it's red, and it becomes big. It, you know, becomes kind of a tumor, it becomes big. Then it becomes painful, that's the dolor. And then you got the calor, which is the heat, okay? And that is the sign that there's been some kind of insult to your body and your body is now trying to repair it. But the very next thing that you learn is that inflammation is actually a reaction of your own body to the injury. The injury itself isn't the inflammation. So what happens is that your body makes this big, massive, huge response to even a tiny little insult, right? So for example, if you have a bee sting or some kind of insect sting, then insect bite, then you get a lot of inflammation, right? And actually, a big part of a lot of these respiratory diseases like COVID-19, the part that kills people is the body's own inflammation reaction. So that's called a cytokine storm. And so one of the things I always tell my friends who get injured is, like, you want to immediately ice it and take some anti-inflammatories and elevate it, and that way you reduce the inflammation so you don't injure yourself. I would say 90% of the injury that somebody sustains when they actually hurt themselves happens after the injury. It's inflammation. It's the attack of the body upon itself. It's an overreaction. And that has an analog in the way we deal with difficulties in life. So there is stuff happening out there, and since the beginning of time, there's always been stuff happening out there. The question is, how are you reacting to it? Are you going, stop, this is terrible. Or are you looking at CNN going, that jackass again, I can't believe he's making my life so miserable. Are you wigging out because you're living with a family member you cannot stand and they said something that was insulting? Any number of things can cause a massive inflammatory reaction in you if you allow it, if you perpetuate it, if you become accessory to this pain for yourself. So, there's the work of this professor called George Bonanno. And what he's Johnny, he's basically says, look, he's not even sure the trauma really exists. He said, look, okay, so bad stuff happens to people, but trauma is kind of optional. There are potentially traumatic events and there is trauma, okay? So anything can be a potentially traumatic event if you let it, right? And everything can be kind of like a learning experience that was a little painful if you let it. So here we are, stuck at home, maybe losing a job, maybe losing a family member or friend, right? Maybe you're sick yourself a little bit. It kind of sucks, right? The world is already trying to assault you in its own special way, whether it's by viruses or circumstances or nasty bosses, or whatever it is, right? It doesn't need your help to add on to that. That's the inflammation. That's the extra part, right? So when you practice meditation, when you practice centering your mind, when you practice reframing events in terms of, oh, wow, something bad happened here. And, well, bad stuff happens a lot. And I'm kind of okay. I'm still standing and breathing and I still have friends. I still have food, still have a future. So you can always reframe that such that the event isn't nearly as traumatic as it could be. Even the time in occasions when what happened is obviously tremendously painful, you can still do this, and this can bring to you a lot of solace and a lot of peace. So try it. And basically decide that even if stuff happens, you choose not to have that massive inflammatory reaction. And instead, you come back to the space of calm, whether it's through meditation, whether it's by exercise, whether it's just by being fully present, whether it's by reading a book that brings you back to that center, whatever it is, make that your own practice. So we're going to do a bunch of practices today that will allow you to feel that and do it very quickly. So these centering practices, I like them a lot. They make me feel great whenever I remember to use them. And the key thing is to remember to use them. That's why we have these sessions, because look, all this information is already out there in the public domain. And what you need is somebody who can bring you a menu and say, hey, look, we have these cool practices today. Would you like to try them? You're like, yes, please. We try them. It feels good. Then you're like, yes, that's a good address in my brain. I want to go back there. And then you can go back there. And the recordings are available. You can download them, listen to this stuff as long as you wish. So, and before we go into that, I just want to let you know, look, there's no reason for you to wait for life to begin again. This is life. And there's never a point that you've been alive when it hasn't been life. Okay. It's not like, oh, my life is on hold. I'm just going to stop. Freeze. Well, that's not going to work very well, is it? And it'll make for a very awkward talk if I continue doing that. So you also don't need to let your life freeze. This is life as it is. So what could you be doing? What are the things that you're now enabled to do that you couldn't do before? What are some new practices you can pick up, like say meditation or breathing practice or yoga? What are some fiction books or self-help books you've always wanted to read? And you know, if you're stuck at home with people you don't like, guess what? That's your spiritual workout right there. That's like heavy duty free weight lifting. Okay. So all this can be reframed as an opportunity. And some of you are in much, much tougher positions than others. You know, somebody emailed me today about how she is housed with her tormentor. Her husband is abusive, physically, verbally, and she can't get out. So what do you do in that position? And that becomes, it becomes so important for you to find that space of peace, find that space of joy inside of you that nobody can access and nobody can sully. And the more you practice that, the more you have that, the more you have that choice to go to the place where you have your own peace, your own calm, and your own silence. Okay, good, good. So questions, if you have them, or particular issues that you want me to address, now's a good time to put that in the chat. Good. Let me see if I can open. Where did the unmute go? This is interesting. I can't find the unmute button. Okay, I'll just wave hi. I'll figure out a way to hear your voices soon. Speaker view, maybe that's it. All right, Zoom, so interesting, different every time I use it. All right, fantastic. Let's keep on moving. So today I want to teach you a little breathing exercise, which is super fun. I like it a lot. Works for me. It's great. And it's derived from Shaivic Kashmiri Tantra. So esoteric, funky, cool stuff. But it's really just breathing in a way that you haven't done it before. So let's do that. Let's practice that. So this is the notion of spanda. And in one of the earlier episodes of the Sanity Sessions, I taught you about how to do spanda. And the notion of spanda is that everything in the universe is vibrating. So light is a form of electromagnetic radiation. It kind of goes in waves like that. Sound is a form of vibration. It's air molecules vibrating and moving through the air. And heat is the vibration of individual molecules moving back and forth. So any kind of energy in the world is a form of vibration. And guess what? You are made of the same stuff that the rest of the universe is made of. So you are also vibrating. You are also part of this big field of vibration, of movement, of aliveness. And remember, if you're going through some pain, some difficulty right now, that is a sign that you're alive. It means like, oh my God, aliveness is at a peak. This is amazing. I mean, I feel so amazing right now, but the alternative is to be dead and not vibrating. So pretty good so far. Now, what you want to do is you want to now pay super close attention to your breath. We're going to do a similar thing to what we did with the meditation, the breath meditation, except that we're going to focus even more. So what I want you to do is to close your eyes and take an ultra super duper slow breath. Because what you're going to do is you're going to follow that breath, a single molecule of air, column of air, whatever you want, but you're going to follow your breath as it goes up your nose and through the rest of your body. So actually feel the entire path of this air as it moves into your body, starting with the nostrils. Up, up with the nostrils, and then goes down the trachea. Down into your bronchus, down into your major bronchi, down to the bronchioles, down all the way into your alveoli, the little sacs of air where you get the exchange of air molecules. The oxygen changes with the carbon dioxide. Then again, slow it down even more. Feel the air coming through. And if you have not muted yourself, please do so now. I cannot mute everybody apparently. And go ahead and feel that air coming through all the way down. And the key concept in Tantra is mutuality. And the idea is that as you are breathing this air, the air is also breathing you. As you are benefiting from this air, the air is benefiting from you. As you're enjoying this breath, the breath is also enjoying you. So imagine each one of these molecules of air, of oxygen, going through your nose, up and down, into your trachea, into your lungs. Imagine that each one of them is alive, because it is, it's moving around. It wants to become one with you. It is feeling the sides of your air passages. It is feeling the insides of your bronchi and bronchioles. And in the ultimate act of intimacy, it is becoming one with you at the point of contact with the capillaries inside your alveoli. And it's going into your body to go and nourish your individual cells. It is becoming one with you, and you are becoming one with it. And feel yourself as your lungs. You see them as this ocean that's in continuity with the even vaster ocean. There's a sea, there's a lake inside you, that's in continuity with the rest of the water, the ocean of air you're surrounded by, the entire atmosphere. And as you do that, feel the vibration of all these air molecules as they join your body and they allow you to vibrate too. See how your whole lung is lit up with that vibration. And from there, those little oxygen molecules emanate through the rest of your body. Maybe even give them a color. For me, they're this bright orange color, and feel that bright orange vibration just moving through your body all the way to the very tips of your toes, very top of your head. Your fingertips in particular, super tingly now. Let's take 10 deep spanda breaths like this as we very slowly feel this mutuality between you and the universe, you and the spanda. Let it rest and then feel it on the way out too. Thank the air as you breathe it. And notice how it thanks you as you breathe out. Once again, breathe it in very slowly, paying close attention as that air moves against your own air passages, caresses the insides of you, and then becomes one with the hemoglobin in your blood, in your capillaries, in your alveoli. Breathe it out. A couple more times. Breathe it in. Really focus and notice how this mutuality, this ecstasy has been available to you the entire time. See all those particles, that particular color of joy, of the vibration of spanda, of life, moving out through your body. Breathe it out. Three more like this. The key is to do it super, super duper slowly. One more time. And one more time. Super slow. Really pay attention. All right. Open your eyes. If you have water, you can do that with water too. So water is super powerful because it's even more tactile than air. So what you want to do is, if you have water, I'll demonstrate for you if you don't, and then you can do it on your own later on. You just take the water, and as you put it inside your mouth, normally what you do is you just gulp it down and that's that, right? But this time I want you to pay attention and to notice the sensation of water on your tongue inside your mouth, the particular temperature, the particular texture, and to think that this water is now totally stoked to be inside your mouth. It's like, oh my God, I get to fulfill my water destiny. I get to be a part of you. This is amazing. Feel the mutuality of the water. As you are drinking the water, it is drinking you. And you are basically expressing your kinship with all bodies of water all throughout the world as you drink the water. And who knew you can get high off a single sip of water? But you can if you pay attention. And that's a big aspect of Buddhist psychology, Buddhist training in general, which is that when you pay attention, you realize that you are surrounded by miracles all the time. All the time. You are a miracle. If you're alive at all, you're a miracle. And the fact that we have this next breath, that who takes it for us? I don't know. The fact that you go to bed and you wake up and your heart kept on beating all through the night, who did that? I don't know. It's all one gigantic miracle, and it's all grace. Somebody gave that to us for free, so gratitude is good. So now here's the dealio. One of the reasons why we can make ourselves kind of crabby and unhappy in any situation is desire. You desire something else. So expectation, desire, these are all related to each other. And one of the things I really like about tantric philosophy is they kind of took care of this desire thing. They realized, look, desire is good if you use it in the right way, right? So when you feel desire, that is basically your body, your mind, your existence expressing its mutuality with the rest of the universe. Now, you can either take that desire for union with the entire universe and scrunch it down and focus it on some tiny little thing like, I need more teepee, and thereby make yourself miserable because you can't find teepee. Or you can go, whoo, commune with the universe and get yourself high, just like you did as we were doing the breathing and the drinking exercise. Okay, so here, the gentleman is Daniel Audier. He wrote this book called Desire, the Tantric Path to Awakening. Fantastic book. So I will read a passage for you. The obstacle to our continual satisfaction is that we reduce our desire instead of allowing it to blossom out over all objects. A reduced desire blocks the fluidity of consciousness, sensations, thoughts, and emotions. The single object takes an exclusive place in our mind, and our being reaches toward this object in a sort of contracted tension. Movement ceases within us, and suffering finds its home in us. On the other hand, when our desire occupies all of space, the absence of one object goes totally unnoticed because the flow of our awareness remains free to come into contact with thousands of others. This is the way tantrikas live, in constant presence to the whole of reality. They are thus incessantly showered by the world's infinite variety. They no longer have to seize to stifle objects. They leave them free, and the contact they have with the world is of such richness that lack, frustration, or solitude never comes and finds its home in them. Lordy, lordy, if that's not one of the most empowering passages I've ever read in my life, I don't know what is, but that is super powerful. And the thing is, here's your desire, and you can use it well, or you can misuse it. And a lot of the pain that we inflict upon ourselves, what I call self-inflicted misery, comes from misuse of desire. Okay. Fantastic. And also realize that, look, you have the option to be high all day long, and you don't need like the latest strain of weed to do it. You can just drink a little bit of water and pay really close attention. I mean, I like chocolate. Chocolate works for me, and chocolate's great because you can take that piece of dark chocolate, you can leave it on your tongue and let it melt. So it has its own little process of going from solid to creamy liquid, and then you know, you swallow it. It's amazing. So if you do that, you will definitely be super duper high. But water, air, just feeling you can instantly make you high. And it's, what Daniel Audier says is that, look, this little sponda thing of being able to just plug into the vibration of the universe, it takes like 15 to 60 seconds at a time. It's super quick. You don't have to sit down. You don't need a cushion. You don't need to sit straight. You don't need to close your eyes and just do it, right? If you do this 15-second thing 60, 70 times a day, you're going to be bathed in happy juice. You're going to be like, woohoo, high all the time. And you're going to be infectious. All the other people, not that kind of infectious, good infectious. You're going to be infectious with this just radiance of life that everybody else will want to be around and also learn from you. So do these little sponda things whenever you can. All you need is like five breaths. All you need is a little sip of water. All you need is just do the plug-in thing. Just imagine you're plugging your hands into the electrical sockets of the universe and go, woohoo, electrocute yourself that way and feel the sponda, and you will feel good. And it works. Works for me. Probably works for you too. All right. And we got people on the Facebook Live. How y'all doing? Thank you for watching. And these are, look, here's the thing, though. I've been to a lot of seminars. I've attended God knows how many conferences, talks, and whatnot. And what I know for sure is that even when I had the best intentions to learn this stuff and incorporate it into my life, didn't necessarily happen. It took me a good 5 years, 10 years to get a regular meditation practice going. And a lot of the stuff that I learned at these conferences were amazing, and yet they have not become a regular part of my life. So that's why I created the Happiness Engineering course. And that's a course, over the course of 3 months, you are going to practice these things. And you're going to practice them in a cohort of people. You're going to help each other. You're going to egg each other on. You're going to hold each other accountable. And I'm going to be teaching you, and I'm going to be expecting you to do some homework. And the combination of all these things together will hopefully give you a fighting chance to incorporate these incredibly powerful practices in your life, so you are a happier, more radiant, and more contributing and productive version of you for the rest of your life. So if that sounds like something you might be interested in, I'm accepting 20 people for the first bunch. So it's at the application is at happinessengineering.com/apply. So boom, just like that. happinessengineering.com/apply, or you can just email me if you didn't get that. It's in the chat box. The idea is I want you to have this stuff right at your fingertips and do them. So as a personal trainer, I would be remiss if all I ever did was to teach you how to do the lat pull down and how to do a push-up and not to try to incorporate a regular exercise practice into your life. So this is about fitness as a human. This is about fitness of your mind. This is about basically becoming that radiant point of joy and light so you can affect the people around you so they can be happier, they can be more radiant, they can give their gift to the world as well. Okay, good. So with that, we've got about 6 minutes left. Questions, what do we have here? We have questions, okay. Wow, that was a refreshing way to think about breathing and hydrating. Yes, you can be high all the time. Thank you, Zoe. Nemo, do you have any advice for social anxiety? Meditation and being mindful has helped me recognize that I'm trapped in my thoughts, but I'm still struggling with relaxing. Fantastic. Okay, so great question. Thank you, Nemo. So the most important thing is you want to practice this stuff. So right now you did something, maybe it helped a little bit, but you're not going to become fit after one personal training session. If you do a bunch of them over several months, then your whole makeup changes, your whole circuitry of your brain changes, right? You become a different person. You become the kind of person for whom social anxiety, which by the way is incredibly common, is less of a problem, right? So you basically become the kind of person for whom the problem ceases to exist. That said, let me give you a tool right now. Okay, good. So this is one of the techniques that I think I learned from Jack Kornfield, and there's analogs for it in hypnosis and NLP, but this is the very simple put on a shelf technique. Okay, so imagine that the anxiety or whatever is burdening you right now is actually a burden. It's like a weight, it's on your shoulders, okay? Or maybe you feel it somewhere else, okay? So what I want you to do is to take a deep breath and just imagine it's now on your shoulders and bring it, as you breathe in, bring all that anxiety feeling wherever it's in your body and put on some kind of weight-like thing on your shoulder, whatever shape that takes, right? And then when you know you've gotten all of it, just take that weight and imagine you lift it up and you put it on some shelf somewhere. Actually, Jack Kornfield says put it in a vase. Just have a worry vase, anxiety vase, and put it there, okay? And as you put it there, notice how, suddenly you feel a little bit lighter. What happened to all that feeling? It's now in the vase, and it can stay in the vase. So that's one quick way you can rapidly change the way you feel. Another thing you can do is a rapid reframe. So anxiety usually comes from the sensation of being observed and judged, which is completely normal because we are hierarchical creatures. We used to be monkeys and everybody knew their rank in the monkey tribe, and now we're people and that circuitry is still there. And you know, if you're higher in the rank, you get fed, you get mating opportunities. If you're not, you don't. So it's pretty important to have that. At the same time, we're in this modern society where that rank thing isn't quite so important, so it shows up as social anxiety. So what you want to do is you want to have this outward focus, okay? So you want to be externally focused instead of internally focused. So when you're in some kind of social setting, when you're giving a talk, whatever it is, I encourage you to become curious. Become curious in the people in front of you and notice things. Explicitly notice, oh, wow, look, their shirt is red and they're wearing black pants. Isn't that cool? Maybe even say it out loud if you need to, right? But the whole point is to do that external focusing because you cannot externally focus and internally focus at the same time. It is impossible. Your brain can't do it. So go ahead and try that and see how that goes. And just be very deliberate about it. Say, okay, in this situation where I have social anxiety, I'm going to externally focus and become curious. Because when you're curious, it's very, very difficult for you to be anxious at the same time. Okay, good. I hope that's useful. Okay. Struggling with it, yeah. And the thing is, you don't want to push it down. You don't want to push it away. You don't want to like try to trash it, right? The more you try to repress an emotion, the more it comes back in some weird form at some other highly inconvenient time. So what you want to do is you want to allow yourself to feel it completely. It's like, oh wow, look at that. That's the anxiety. And the more you meditate, the more you're able to identify with the part of you that can recognize the anxiety and is not the anxiety. The metaphor I use a lot is that of a TV screen. So on the TV, you can project any kind of show. You can have war zones, you can have cartoons, you can have concert. Whatever it is, the TV screen does not change. And if you turn off the program, TV screen remains, you can put on something else. So identify with your consciousness, with that clear screen that is the thing that sees, is the thing that notices. And the more you do that, the more you're like, oh, wow, look, there's my anxiety. You can take one step back from it and kind of look at it, kind of, you know, go around and say, isn't that interesting? And the more you do that, the more you gain dominion over it. You may still get the feeling, but the feeling does not control you nearly as much. It becomes much more manageable. Okay, these are great questions. More questions, please, if you have them. Hello, Facebook Live people. Is this angle good? Let's see. All right. More questions if you have them. And if you can't think of questions right now, please feel free to zap them to me. It's Ali@happinessengineering.com. Pretty easy to remember. Thank you for coming here. And we're going to have more sessions like this. So tomorrow, same time, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. London time. And then Friday and Saturday, different times. Check those. I think Friday it's at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, and Saturday it's 11 a.m. That way we can get everybody all over the world to experience these things live. And if you have questions, throw them at me. And in the meantime, recordings are available. Same place you found this invitation, you can find the recordings. Happinessengineering.com. Thank you so much for your attention. And go forth, be safe, and be happy. The world needs you to be happy. Thank you.